Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Viewpoints on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel, a relatively new podcast series with my colleague Burkhard Varnholt, where we do like to update you on developments throughout the global market and macro landscape. With that, Burkhard, good morning to you. Thank you for dropping by the podcast and for spending some time today with our listeners and our clients. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure to be back here.
So, Burkhard, since we last spoke last week, we have seen some notable momentum within financial markets. In the U.S., we did see the Dow Jones Industrial Average hit a new all-time high, having surpassed slightly the 40,000 level, and we're still seeing momentum across U.S. equity markets. So some investors must be wondering, how long can this bull market last? What do you say to the skeptical investor, or perhaps to a young investor who feels humbled by these current levels?
Sure. Well, you know, that's indeed top of mind for many of our accounts I speak to, whether they're young or old, private or institutional investors. Look, I think there are three things which matter here. Number one, and I think we discussed this before, stock markets are essentially in the business of setting new all-time highs. Never forget that. You know, I mean, that's essentially what they do for a living. That's what they do most often, because at the end of the day, stock markets just mirror profits, interest rates, and human nature. And as I mentioned before, since 1950, so in post-war history, the broad U.S. equity market has actually set over 1,250 all-time highs. That's an average of 16 all-time highs every year. The second thing which I think matters here is, having said that, it is equally important to have a sense of the anatomy of bull markets. While every market is different, some patterns, I believe, stay the same. For example, most bull markets follow the same four chapters. Those chapters may differ in time, but they're always the same. And the better you understand, I think, where you are, the better you can add value through asset allocation. So just to recap, here are those four chapters. Chapter one, bull markets are invariably born during the proverbially darkest hour. And this one was born on October 11th, 2022. That's when the lockdown-induced inflation was exacerbated as Russia's invasion in Ukraine and a global energy crisis threatened to push economies into recession. That was the S&P's darkest hour, and it traded down to 3,500 points. It was a terrible year for stocks and bonds equally. Chapter 2. Bull markets then, once they emerge from the darkest hours, climb that proverbially steep wall of worry. So most of last year, the bears were clearly the opinion leaders on Wall Street. They talked about false starts, recession, and inflation risks. But all those fears about spiraling inflation, credit crunches, or recession came to nothing. And so a small group of magnificent stocks, seven in number, did most of the heavy lifting. Next comes chapter three. Once they've climbed the steep wall of worry, bull markets subsequently attract more capital. They broaden and increasingly synchronize with earnings and yields. So the outsized returns of chapter one and two give way to more sustainable returns in line with EPS growth above everything else. Chapter three can often last longer. Take the 1990s, when it lasted essentially for a full decade. And then comes chapter four. Bull markets usually die from one of three reasons. Bull markets either die from euphoria, that was the dot-com bubble, or from a recession or inflation. The third thing which matters here, as we judge markets, I think investors should simply judge the whereabouts in the current market. Where do we stand today? And as you know, we have maintained the view that the economy is strong, inflation is receding, and markets are not yet exuberant. So in our house view, which has worked very well so far, 2024 is really all about Chapter 3. It's all about the bull market is synchronizing with earnings and it's broadening widely. The trough happened in October 11, 2022. Last year, 2023, the Magnificent Seven climbed the steep wall of worry, and that lifted markets not only on Wall Street, but also in Asia and Europe. But the market lacked breadth. And so this year, 2024, markets have started to broaden. More and more markets are hitting all-time highs, the Dow Jones at 40,000 points being a case in point, but European and emerging market stocks are doing the same thing, and many sectors are catching up too. So we believe this market has legs to run. The economy remains robust while inflation slowly dissipates, and bond yields, in our house view, will ultimately follow, which is why tactically we are keeping equities fully invested at our strategic benchmarks and quality bonds even slightly above that. Time in the market, as I've said before, still beats timing the market.
So, Burkhard, you think about the impact, this upward momentum, and as you pointed out, our chief investment office here at UBS believes there is still room to run in the equity rally, but you think about the impact this is having to investment returns portfolios. I know you talked about the astonishing wealth effect that this long bull market has had for the baby boomer generation in particular. Talk to us about that a bit.
Well, absolutely, because the boomers are both driving this economy as much as they're benefiting from it. I mean, consider the following. So the baby boomers were born between 1946 to 1964, and true to the old saying, live long and prosper, they certainly prospered during their long lives, along with a rising stock market and a growing economy. During their adult lifetimes, nominal GDP grew more than eightfold. The Dow Jones increased 40-fold from 1,000 points in 1982 to just over 40,000 points last Friday. And the S&P 500 matched that gain with its capitalization rising from $1 trillion in 1982 to over $40 trillion today. According to the Fed, which collects the baby boomers' net worth data and other generations too since 1990, the boomers' net worth per household has actually skyrocketed 19-fold from $4.1 trillion in 1990 to $76.2 trillion. To be precise, the value of their mutual funds has risen from $300 billion to $21.6 trillion over this period. Their real estate net equity is up from $4.6 to now $16 trillion today. And as their net worth is at an all-time high, why should they stop consuming, especially services like healthcare, travel, and tourism? In fact, since 1982, the increasing prosperity of America has been reflected in the increasing share of services relative to goods in GDP. Plus, real personal consumption expenditures per household rose from about $55 a year in 1982 to $120,000 today. So, you know, the standard of living doubled over those four decades, while after tax profits increased 14-fold. They really lived up to live long and prosper.
Well, I have to say, Burkhard, when you put some numbers around the wealth effect and the impact it's had to consumer trends over the years, it is quite eye-opening. So with that, I'm curious, where exactly does this leave investors, markets, and the economy going forward?
Sure. Well, look, in our roaring 2020 scenario, the Dow Jones could well increase another 50% through the end of the decade. So that would be to 60,000 in 2030. And, of course, the S&P could grow 50%, another 50% too, and that'd be around 8,000. Consider the following. Since 1936, or take post-war history, the S&P's collective reported earnings per share grew on average 8.8% per year. Most recently, its EPS grew even faster, namely 12%. And that's thanks to the solid economy, and most importantly, thanks to very high productivity gains, 2.7%, which are, of course, deflationary. Now, consensus expected profit and margin estimates project profits and margins to even speed up over the next 2 years. But whatever that's worth, today's structural in cyclical growth drivers, the rapid rise of a new world order, solid labor markets, balance sheets, and disruptive innovation, should, in our house view indeed, push the economy to new frontiers for the rest of this decade. That's what the roaring 2020 scenario is really all about. So the bottom line to all of this is that it stands to reason that corporate profits continue to grow at double-digit rates while inflation and yields decline. And even when compounding lower profit growth figures for 6 years, that supports another 50% increase in stocks by 2030, or Dow Jones at 60,000 at the end of this decade. And that is indeed the big picture that investors, in our view, should keep in mind at all times.
Well, Burkhard, as always, very thought-provoking, thinking about how financial markets may evolve from here. Also interesting to hear your thoughts on the recent momentum we've seen and the potential impact it's having to the economy, not only in the U.S., but around the world. So thank you, Burkhard, as always, for spending some time with our listeners and clients here on Viewpoints, and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
Well, thank you, Dan. Looking forward to catching up again next week. All the best for now.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.